Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. I am joined by the one and only Dan Rubenstein, if only because misery loves company, Dan. Let's face it.
It was a tough weekend for us, huh?
Feel free to hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, or FanCred. We'll get to your reverbs momentarily. Yeah, I went back and checked, actually.
Yeah.
And the last time that both our teams, Notre Dame and Oregon, lost on the same week, it was September 3rd, 2011. That was the day of the infamous USF game between Notre Dame and South Florida.
And LSU.
Right, and then Oregon lost to LSU. I believe that game was a neutral site in Dallas, right?
Correct, yeah. Jerry's World.
So we're going back a couple years since our last foray into this whole woe is us thing.
Yeah.
We'll get to all that action in just a little bit. A lot of shifting going on in and around the world of college football, specifically with the BCS. Show today brought to you in part by Hulu Plus, and we'll tell you more about that here momentarily. But before we do anything more, we got a record turnout this week on the Solid Verbal Reverb line at 408-VERBAL-1. That's 408-837-2251. Let's have a listen. And Oregon fans, I apologize in advance.
Oh, Danny boy, the ducks are tanking.
Hi, this is Liz and Carrie.
Hey.
This is Chris from Austin.
This is Mike in Los Angeles.
Sam in Norman.
Katie from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Just want you guys to know I'm not that upset because LSU's a basketball school anyway.
On the bright side, don't have to worry about Tommy Reese throwing three picks in a BCS game.
It was really nice of Notre Dame to honor the Bob Davy, Tyrone Willingham, and Charlie Weiss errors with that performance against Pittsburgh tonight.
2 years in a row now, Marcus Mariota hasn't been able to lead his team to a win over Stanford. Last year, Tommy Reese led Notre Dame to a win over Stanford. Just saying.
Another physical matchup for the Oregon Ducks. Another loss.
Gimmick offense and gimmick special teams lead to zero national championships.
When DeAnthony Thomas talked about scoring at least 40 points, he meant that that's what both teams combined were going to put up, right?
Sooner offense is totally frustrating, but it could be worse. Could have the Oregon offense.
5-3 is not a football score. That is a high hockey score, maybe a soccer score.
At the time, the Sooners have a 2-run lead in the top of the second.
There's such a thing as a defensive shootout.
And it is 13 minutes into the fourth quarter. And I just want to let you guys know that Penn State just converted their first third down. Yep.
Hey, Illini fans, we still got 3 games left. So the drive for 6 is still alive. Oh, crap. We got Ohio State next weekend?
Al Borges needs to be exiled to Corsica or something.
We've torn down the altar, I think. The altar is destroyed.
How the hell did Stanford lose to Utah?
This is how you beat a team like Oregon. Put the men on the line and just push them around.
And watching the Stanford-Oregon game on Spanish-language broadcast is awesome.
And I guess that's just what happens whenever you have a ballerina go up against a heavyweight champ. You just get knocked out.
This is an official motion to change Clemsoning into Oregoning.
Kind of new to the transitive property rule, but if Eastern Washington beat Oregon State, who beat Utah, who beat Stanford, who beat Oregon, that make Eastern Washington the number 2 team in the country?
Miles, freaking Jack, baby. The Jack of all trades. Oh, my God. Love that dude.
A true freshman linebacker is UCLA's leading rusher. I'm not sure if that's good or bad.
Bill Muschamp's not worried about this loss because he's packing his bags for Texas. And I think he's going to do great things at Rice.
Little known fact, Mel Kiper only watches Logan Thomas games versus Miami.
Good grief. I was just wondering if there's any hope for people who watch the University of Virginia play football. Yeah, I'd drink a six-pack, and it's only 2:30. It's a rough season for us.
So, Beck Mullins and Joey Galloway just discussed the possible route to the Rose Bowl for the Gophers. Is this real life?
An LSU and Oregon fan, respectively. We decided we're going to move to Toronto and work for Rob Ford because there's nothing really left here for us in America.
I think he has a better chance of winning.
So Oregon has another quack up against Stanford. Well, I guess the Ducks just aren't all they were quacked up to be.
I've only got one thing to say for my Ducks.
And there you have it, Dan. An exuberant batch of messages, let's say. We had more than ever before. Look, it is very fitting because in terms of BCS championship significance, this was the biggest remaining week. You know, there are games over the next couple weekends, and we'll help figure out the Big 12 and other BCS bowls and who's eligible. But it's not until Thanksgiving weekend that we're going to get more clarity on who's actually playing for the title.
I couldn't possibly see one of these two teams losing. I could definitely see one of these two. I don't know. It's college football.
So which one of the two is more likely? Because if you look at the schedule now, Alabama has the Iron Bowl. That one, I guess, would be the most obvious. Florida State appears to only just have Florida, which might not be a bowl.
I don't know
team.
That's like the marquee matchup left for Florida State.
No. Well, okay. You're talking the ACC championship.
Yeah, that's the ACC championship game is probably what would catch the Seminoles. Florida's awful. Florida's really not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that ACC. Murderer's Row.
Well, we'll get into that in a little bit, but let's start on Thursday.
Yeah.
Stanford upends your Oregon Ducks by a 26-20 final score, and I'm not going to try and tee this up or frame it up or do whatever.
Right.
I'm just going to ask you, as the resident Oregon fan here, what'd you think of this football game?
It was disappointing, but at the same time, it was interesting to watch Stanford perfectly execute a plan against an Oregon team that I don't think any other team in the Pac-12 can execute. It was impressive. The offensive line just toe-to-toe, foot-to-foot. They didn't care about opening up holes. They cared about 3.8 yards per carry, 4.2 yards per carry, and that's it. They didn't care about big plays. They didn't care about being balanced on offense. They didn't care about throwing the ball downfield beyond one or two plays. And that's what they had to do. Was extraordinarily impressed with Stanford on both sides of the ball. They collapsed the Oregon pocket, defensive line and defensive front-wise. They forced big turnovers, and they controlled the ball, something that excellent teams do. And just what happened with Oregon was they got outplayed. They got out-muscled.
Yep.
It didn't help that Marcus Mariota appears to be beat up. I forget which knee it is, but he was arming a lot of throws, not really stepping into them, one of which was kind of a sure touchdown that he undershot Josh Huff in the first half. DeAnthony Thomas gets it stripped masterfully by Shane Scove in the first half at like the two-yard line. And, you know, I credit Oregon for clawing back in the second half creatively and moving quickly. But Stanford clearly at home putting in 7, 8, 9 offensive linemen at a time.
Yeah.
Clearly the better team in this game. And it's, you know, I don't know how many teams, and there's a lot of the thing that annoys me more than anything with this game, because I'm fully conceding Oregon was the inferior team, is the notion that Oregon has a Stanford problem.
Yeah, I want to get to that.
When I would say that like 122 out of 125 FBS teams would probably have a Stanford problem with like the consecutive best offensive line classes that they've brought in to Palo Alto. And it's very simple when teams all over the country say, you know, well, that's Oregon. Can't win when they play against top offensive and defensive lines. Like, sort of like every top team loses to a team with a slightly better offense or defensive line. That's okay to me. It's not a matter of Mariota throwing 4 interceptions and looking sloppy. They were outplayed. And Oregon, by the way, against Stanford teams built similarly with first-round picks along the offensive line, then first-round picks on the defense and top defenses. This is a team that killed Stanford for 2 years. This is a Stanford team on a 1-year home winning streak.
Okay.
The last time they played each other in Palo Alto, Oregon shelled them with Andrew Luck. So this isn't year after year after year after year. This is Marcus Mariota struggling for various reasons. This is Stanford outplaying Oregon lines, which will happen with, I mean, is this the best offensive line in college football? Maybe. I mean, it's certainly worth talking about. And Oregon, if Oregon goes 11-1, is it an Oregon team that just can't, you know, beat teams with good lines? That's not the situation.
All right. Well, I'm going to backtrack. I want to come back to that, and I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit just for the sake of conversation. But, you know, as you mentioned, all due credit to Oregon for fighting back.
Right.
The overwhelming majority of this game, 50 minutes of this game, were not competitive. It
Correct.
Was 26-0 with 11 minutes left.
Correct.
And they did claw their way back. 2 minutes left. They got to 26-20. They weren't able to get the job done. But you're right. They did get bullied in this game on both lines, especially when Stanford wanted short yardage. We talk a lot about the defensive line. But when Stanford wanted short yardage on offense, they effectively got it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and there's no doubt that Oregon's offense was disrupted to some degree. That, of course, is where this whole discussion of the Stanford problem comes up. Do they have a Stanford problem? And I don't think it's an unfair question to ask, but to say that Oregon has a quote-unquote Stanford problem gives an awful lot of credit to Stanford.
Right.
And, you know, you're wise to point out that Stanford hasn't always shut down Oregon, especially during that Luck era. But Oregon's lost to at least one team with a physical defensive line like Stanford's in each of the last four seasons. So, and look, these are good teams that Oregon lost to. It really doesn't feel fair to say that there's any kind of problem.
Right.
Right. When you're winning 10 or 11 games a year, a lot of teams would love to have that problem. But it is very reasonable and obvious, frankly, to look at the teams that have beaten Oregon and see somewhat of a common denominator. These teams all had something in common. They were really physical on the defensive line. Is this something that potentially exposes that Oregon system?
The interesting thing to me is when Oregon beats teams that are filled with NFL-bound and NFL-talent offensive and defensive linemen, like Wisconsin, like Kansas State, like USC, these teams these past couple years in which they took it to a pretty beat-up and average USC defense, but filled with these dominant defensive players. You're seeing Morgan Breslin, Leonard Williams, all these guys. And Kenyon Barner rushes for 324 yards against them. You're seeing a Wisconsin team stocked with NFL offensive linemen, Monty Ball in the Rose Bowl, and Oregon wins that game. But the credit never really goes to the defensive line, the front. You know, Kiko Alonso got a lot of credit for that Rose Bowl. But the narrative when they do beat those big physical teams is never about the line play playing well. It's about like the speed. And then when they don't play well, it's always like, oh, well, that's the weakness. It's picking and choosing. When the SEC team comes to Eugene and gets dominated, then goes back home and beats South Carolina and almost beats Georgia, that's never a thing. But then, you know, all of a sudden it's an absolute when it doesn't
happen.
It's
an absolute. And we're going to get to that with Florida State. The only other point I'll add on this, and then we'll move on. You're very correct in saying that these were great football teams that Oregon lost to in spots, and that certainly the quote-unquote problem does not hold true in every instance. It never does. Certainly in this case, it doesn't, and there is a bit of a pick-and-choose feel here.
Right.
But it does say something to me that in nearly every case, Oregon was taken completely out of its rhythm, held well below their seasonal averages when they're playing these types of teams. Furthermore, the narrative for Oregon, from the uniforms to the offense to the facilities to the culture of football, it seems from the outside in that they're not like everybody else. That's what they're trying to sell. They're trying to sell that they're better than everyone else. And when you see these types of performances—
I wouldn't say, but different.
Different. Okay, that's fair. But when you see them being shut down by these teams, it flies in the face of that narrative a bit.
And they don't play down. They lose to teams that are, this is a top five team. They lose to LSU. They lose to Stanford. They're not playing down to opponents. They're not losing to inferior opponents.
Another team that I think proved a lot, and this was another Thursday night game, Baylor 41, Oklahoma 12. Now, I was dead wrong about this game. You were correct.
Yeah.
I liked Oklahoma plus the 15. I thought the Sooners could run on Baylor. I thought they could control the game. But as you know, as the story goes, Oklahoma held to just 87 rushing yards, only 237 in total. Baylor does it with defense until the offense gets rolling. They force two interceptions. Most importantly, again, stats aside, most importantly, they prevented Oklahoma from getting any momentum whatsoever. They never had any traction in this game.
Correct.
They
could especially not, on offense. Yeah.
To the point, Dan, where it felt to me like Oklahoma came in with no plan for what they were going to do.
Yeah, and that's sort of what the case has been for Oklahoma at many points during the season. And I think first and foremost, the Phil Bennett hire a couple of years ago for Baylor, defensive coordinator,
right.
is turning out to be one of the more important, amazing hires in college football these past couple of years, because not only was Baylor able to get to Oklahoma, make tackles, and you know their players seemed to be in the correct position most of the game, they were doing it with four up front. They weren't blitzing from all angles. Their front four was making huge plays, getting huge pushes, and quickly forcing Blake Bell into bad decisions, forcing him to get nowhere near a rhythm. They pick him off a couple times. And yeah, I think you hit it on the head. When Oklahoma can't do anything on the ground and going into the game, I think they had the second best rushing attack in the Big 12 against Big 12 teams. They're locked down. They're, you know, with electronics, when the software goes and you're just left with, I think the term is a brick. Like if you hack your Mac Mini and then it crashes, it's just a brick. And that's what Oklahoma's offense is when it can't run. Cause Blake Bell to just sort of shoulder the game in a big spot on the road. I think we saw what happens.
Yeah. I think he was 15 of 35. I don't have the stat in front of me, but it wasn't,
Fewer than 50% of his passes.
Way fewer than 50%. And look, I've had spirited debates now with Baylor people regarding my skepticism of this team.
Right.
I would point out that when we did our previews a few months ago, I was the one asking the questions about whether this could be the year for Baylor and whether the defense could play well enough to take pressure off the offense and advance this team forward. I remember at that time being almost uncomfortably bullish on Baylor before the year. That doesn't mean now that I can't be skeptical. I wanted to see them against a better team. And we got it here. It was a successful first test. I think I'm well within my right to remain skeptical.
You're still skeptical of Baylor right now?
I am far less skeptical.
Okay.
Now than I was before. Baylor has not shown much weakness yet. Strange things, though, do tend to happen with programs that are flying to new heights. And they've got some games on the schedule that I think they could lose. They could lose on the road to Oklahoma State. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the only clear losable game at this point. I mean, they may lose to Texas to finish the season, and I'm not a big believer in Texas Tech after yesterday. The thing to me that separates Baylor from a lot of teams previously like Baylor, you know, teams have put up 500 yards passing a game, you know, crazy numbers and passing the ball around and putting up huge amounts of points, just like Baylor has all season. The difference to me is Baylor's ability to run the ball to do it deeply. Glasgow Martin and Shaq Linwood and Lake Seastrunk all have proven at different points to be able to take and shoulder the load. And the fact that the defense is so much better than a lot of defenses we see that play opposite these very quick moving offenses. This Baylor defense rotates in really well. They're sound tackling. They win one-on-one matchups. They're aggressive. And they appear to have stamina to be able to stay on the field as long as needed. And so I feel like there is a difference. I still think they could lose to Oklahoma State. I think that's an entirely realistic proposition. But I have more faith in Baylor at this point than I think I could at any point in the season, last season, any of these teams that crop up, you know, like when Texas Tech with Graham Harrell was throwing on everybody. They weren't a complete team then. They were a fun team. They're a dangerous team. I don't think this Baylor team is dangerous. I just think this Baylor team is excellent.
Yeah, they're very good, and they're much better defensively. We saw that in this football game. I'm just skeptical because they haven't been in this situation before.
What do you think the spread's going to be for that Oklahoma State game in Stillwater?
I would
say... So they ended up giving, what, 15 or 16 at home against Oklahoma when the line closed?
Yeah, I would say...
What is it open at?
15?
I think it's even more.
21?
I mean, it depends what happens this coming week, but...
It's 2 to 3 touchdowns.
At Oklahoma State, I think that game opens as... Yeah, maybe about 15 points.
2 to 3 touchdowns, I think, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
I like Baylor. I do. I'm rooting for Baylor. They're a great story, and Bryce Petty's having an incredible season. He might have his name now in some dark horse Heisman talk.
Oh, it's there.
He's not going to win because there are guys in front of him with much
more
acclaim.
He's top 7 or 8, I would
but
say.
He's certainly in the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
The other game then of true national significance was in Tuscaloosa last night between Alabama and LSU. And look, Alabama 38, LSU 17. There is nothing more that you or I could possibly add to the national discussion about Alabama at this point. I enjoyed the game. It was good to see LSU hang around for a few quarters and push Alabama. It's always fun to see Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham and and watch these guys who are going to be playing on Sundays. Otherwise, though, this was typical Alabama domination. As we expected, they had a lot of success running the football. A.J. McCarron, very effective, being a game manager, had three passing touchdowns. It really was exactly the kind of game you might expect from Alabama. There were no real twists down the stretch. Maybe the first few quarters, but in the fourth quarter, once Alabama started doing Alabama stuff, there really wasn't much here to make this a truly exciting football game.
What was my prediction, by the way? Because I feel like I was very close. It was either 37-17 or 34-17.
It was somewhere in that range. Yeah, we could.
Yeah,
and
it finds itself at 38-17, even though the altar of Dan temporarily
derailed. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But is that fair to say, though? Is that fair to say that towards the latter part of this game, you found yourself more just like, oh, Alabama is boring good. You know what I mean?
I don't even know boring. They're just better. And I use that as an all-encompassing term. They're just better. They tackle better. They read better. They stay in lanes better. They break tackles better. They make quick decisions better. They're just so much more complete in every facet of every game that Florida State and Baylor are the teams that I feel like could give Alabama, if they're able to get into a rhythm, that could give Alabama trouble. And I don't know necessarily in which order, just because Baylor and the thing that hurts Baylor at this point is Tevin Reese, I believe, is out for the year, best receiver. But I think at this point, Alabama is just in such, and you don't want to say cruise control because it's not an automatic thing. A lot of hard work goes into this, but it is just a machine. And it's a machine that even when it's 17-all, you're still kind of shocked if LSU wins that game.
Yeah.
And it's the proof is right in everything that Alabama does. And they don't turn the ball over. They don't make mistakes. They're in the right place 98.4% of the time. And if you're beating Alabama, that means A, you have talent comparable, and B, it's a Herculean effort, and C, you're getting breaks. And there's no other team that you need all three of those things against in college football.
I remember when Alabama trailed against Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M. And now keep in mind, this was just week three of the college football season.
Right.
Even down 14-0 very early in that game, it still felt like Alabama had the upper hand.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why that is. I don't know if it's just preconceived notions of what Alabama is, what they should be. That could certainly have something to do with it. But
it's
as
the process, Ty.
As the process has shown now.
Yeah.
Over the other 8
and
weeks
and having
of the season,
better players than everybody, but yes.
As the process has shown, I think that feeling has held true. Even if they're down, it just doesn't seem like you can rattle these guys. They're able to stick to that process, to that plan, and their players are just better. They're not doing things that are going to hurt themselves. The only tidbits that were actually of interest to me after this game was over. First, did you see Alabama fans chanting, "We want Bama"?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Everyone else out there is chanting, "We want
Bama."
Just
mocking everybody.
Why can't they do it as well? And also, Vern Lundquist jabbing Brent Musburger over the whole Catherine Webb thing. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm. That's all he was going to say because he doesn't work for Four Letter Network.
Do you think these guys are old drinking buddies?
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe there's something between Lundquist and Musburger, but I got to feel like when they cross paths, wherever that is, that they have a good old time with it. I can't imagine there's bad blood, but maybe I just don't know.
They probably have the same bookie or something. I'm sure they know each other.
Let me ask you a question.
Please.
After we were talking about your first date, going to see the movie Inception.
Yeah.
If this coming Friday night, you were the god of college football. You went to a movie theater and you could have any two teams play out on a movie screen, just an all-encompassing entertainment experience. You could control which two teams played for sheer entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
Which two would you have play?
Two teams, sheer entertainment purposes.
Right. You just want to be entertained. You are, you're sitting at a gladiator coliseum. You're sitting in a coliseum and you just want pure entertainment.
I feel like the answer is Baylor, Oregon, if only because no one's going to pay $10 to go see two teams that are 0-10. So two teams with high-powered offenses, Baylor, Oregon's the answer.
I think it's either Baylor, Oregon. I think it's some combination of Baylor, Oregon, Baylor, Florida State, Oregon, something in that. I think that's fair.
Or,
you know what? I would throw Texas A&M as a combination in there just because they have to win shootouts because their defense is so bad.
Do we have to have current teams? Can we play like past
current
teams?
Current.
It has to be current teams, because that could be cool.
We have an entire offseason, Ty.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, Alabama wins 38-17. They've got a game coming up on Thanksgiving weekend against Auburn. You might have heard of the Iron Bowl. The game's going to be played at Auburn.
Yep.
How likely is it that Auburn could beat Alabama?
Not very.
What's the point spread in that game?
Alabama at Auburn. I think Alabama's giving
16.5.
13.5.
Wow. I would jump on 13.5 in a heartbeat.
Then I would say 16.5.
We're going to bet that up right now. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to some other games, the show today is sponsored by Hulu Plus. You've probably tried Hulu.com. Now with Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. Hulu Plus lets you watch thousands of hit TV shows and a selection of acclaimed movies on your TV or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. It all streams in stunning HD for the best viewing experience. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite current TV shows. You can also check out exclusive content, including Hulu originals like The Awesomes, starring Saturday Night Live's Seth Meyers, and Moon Boy, starring Chris O'Dowd from Bridesmaids. Hulu Plus offers a great selection of acclaimed movies as well. $7.99 a month is the low price. You can stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, again, wherever you want. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus for free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/verbal. That is a special offer for our listeners. Make sure you use HuluPlus.com/verbal so you get the extended free trial so they know that we sent you. Or you can just go to solidverbal.com and click on the Hulu Plus banner along the right-hand side of the screen. Either way, check it out, Hulu Plus. If you're into TV the way Dan and I are into TV and movies and original entertainment, Hulu Plus is a great way to stay current.
Well, I'm going to go through some top five teams in college football.
Yeah.
Or just any top 10 team. I'm going to give you some names of shows that are available on Hulu Plus.
Okay.
And you tell me which matches up with which.
I don't watch a lot of TV, so...
No, just by the title and the plot of the show.
Please.
New Girl?
Baylor. Yeah.
This is Trophy Wife.
Can we go USC? Do they still count?
USC.
Yeah.
Still beautiful to watch, but not the deepest.
Sure.
Dads?
Any Big Ten team?
Yeah. Modern Family?
Oregon.
Scandal? Texas A&M.
Texas A&M.
All right. Let's move on.
Let's go to some other games. Yeah. By virtue of the Oregon loss now, that sets Florida State up perfectly. They win 59-3, tough one against Wake Forest. Actually led 42-0 at half, ran back an interception, fumble, and a kickoff in this game, in addition to forcing 7 turnovers. By winning this football game, they clinch a berth in the ACC championship game. They have Syracuse, Idaho, and a road game against Florida on Thanksgiving weekend. That's all it's going to take to get them to 12-0. It remains to be seen who they are going to play in the ACC championship game, because the Coastal Division has been effectively blowed up by Virginia Tech's win last night, who only one member of the broadcasting duo had the audacity to select as his lock of the week. But that's neither here nor there. What's your beef with Florida State? Because there was something going on with Twitter. There's something going on Twitter last night. And
I have no beef with Florida State. And I was actually pretty surprised that people reacted as strongly as they did. I just sort of floated a question out there that was at least intriguing to me as somebody tasked with comparing various teams that don't really have crossover schedules and crossover resumes. And it was interesting to me that last year, Florida State, even after they lost to NC State and they were still whatever they were and won, couldn't move at all. They couldn't move up BCS rankings even with losses ahead of them. And it was, you know, as a product of the ACC not really impressing. Now, I'm not going to say that the ACC is a terrible conference, because there are certainly worthy teams in the conference that have looked good at times. I'm also not going to say that the ACC is way ahead of a lot of other conferences, especially, I'm going to run through the Atlantic Division, okay?
Okay.
Florida State, Clemson, Syracuse, Boston College, Wake Forest, Maryland, NC State. It's not the shallowest division in college football, but it's not in the deep end.
It is most certainly
not in the deep end. And the Coastal Division, with Virginia Tech looking as up and down as they've looked, Duke might have an argument as the fourth best team in the ACC. We're at the point where Florida State is, not that they would have any trouble with Duke, but it's a realistic statement to say like, oh, well, they don't have to play Duke this year, so that's not bad.
Right.
We're at that point. And the Miami win doesn't look as good. Granted, Miami's beat up after they really don't look good against Virginia Tech at home last night. Georgia Tech is as up and down, even though they lead the Coastal at the moment, as we've seen. It's just, if we're going to pile on Ohio State for playing in the Big Ten and potentially going two straight years, not that it completely matters that they went undefeated last season, but two straight years going undefeated when they've started to pull away from teams within the conference, and you can look at Ohio State's non-conference, then you look at Florida State's non-conference, and yes, Florida State is Florida, who actually may bring down their strength of schedule this year, and then Idaho and Bethune-Cookman and Nevada. So there's that. And, you know, it's, I think it's worth a discussion when you look at, oh, well, Baylor's played nobody. Well, Florida State, the Clemson struggled. They're a fine team. They're not a very good team. They're a fine team. Miami certainly is not on an upward trajectory at the moment. And I'm also saying that Florida State's the second best team in the country. I think that's pretty clear at this moment. I just don't think the ACC should get a pass.
You know, I don't like the strength of schedule argument with any team. And I've referred to that loosely as the Boise State argument,
right?
Over the years. If you were to airdrop Alabama into the ACC, you could almost make the exact same argument.
Sure.
The point is completely independent of how good a team is. I also don't think what you said was trolling. And we had a lot of Florida State people respond very, very negatively to what you were saying.
A lot of simple children out there.
And again, it comes back to what we were describing earlier about Oregon. Well, it's a pick and choose argument. You can use it when it applies. You can omit it when it doesn't apply. Last year, it was very convenient to use the argument against Florida State.
And they did lose to NC State.
They lost to NC State, but it was very convenient to use that argument about the ACC being a weak conference. This year, no one's talking about it. And that's primarily because Florida State is drilling teams like Wake Forest by 8 touchdowns. So it's a pick and choose argument. I think the ACC is better this season than it was last. So that works in Florida State's favor. And Florida State is a team we both like. We were getting killed.
Absolutely.
We were getting killed on message boards just a few short months ago because some folks said, well, how dare you suggest that Florida State could go to Clemson and win? We both said that. We said that 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. And look where they are now. They're going to play for the BCS championship game. So I like Florida State a lot. I think the arguments about conferences are only on the periphery sort of applicable here. And though the ACC is better this season, I still don't think your initial tweet was in any way trolling the Florida State fan base. They just took it the wrong way. Missouri rolls one up on Kentucky 48-17. Missouri,
they looked really good.
They still control their own destiny. They started Matty Mock at quarterback. He had 5 touchdowns, 4 of which went to Doriel Green Beckham. By the way, it's good to see him getting in on the action. Where's he been?
Absent. And I know that the transition from James Franklin to Matty Mock resulted in a lot more LaDainian Washington, who I believe is out with a toe injury and didn't have a catch. Yes, but it took him becoming the absolute man. Marcus Lucas is very good too, but he's not DGB. Really inconsistent play thus far in his first sort of year and 3 quarters, but his 4 catches for touchdowns were absurdly good. And very nice to see him finally assert consistent dominance over 4 quarters. And if only he can play Kentucky all the time, I can't possibly see this ending.
Yeah, well, the Tigers have rebounded pretty well after losing in double overtime to South Carolina. They're on a bye next week. Then they're on the road against Ole Miss, back home to close out the year then against Texas A&M. If they're able to run the table, they're going to get their crack at Alabama. And I don't think they stand a chance, but they're going to get their crack at Alabama, which if you're Missouri, that's all you can ask for.
I would say they stand a chance. I don't think they stand a chance over 4 quarters, but they can benefit from weirdness in teams that are inferior opponents cannot, just because that defensive line is so good and they are pretty complete everywhere. They're just not as talented and as well coached, but they can win the East, which is from where they were last year. That's fantastic. Being healthy and winning their division in a new conference like the SEC.
Yeah.
Hooray.
And to that end, same deal for Auburn, who rolled one up 55-23 over Tennessee on the road. I think our commentary was pretty spot on here. The scouting report was that Tennessee had the worst rushing defense in the SEC and one of the worst in the country. And you know, if we saw it, that Gus Malzahn saw it too, he just threw the ball 7 times for a grand total of 35 yards. That'll do, by the way, when you can rush for 444.
Not bad.
On the ground, Nick Marshall had over 200 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns. Trey Mason had over 103 touchdowns. This is an Auburn team. The wins are now starting to pile up. Auburn's a top 10 team. They've got this big game in a few weeks. Even if they lose to Alabama, still a huge success story for the Tigers. They're still kind of a BCS consideration at this point. You can't look away from that fact. This right. is a successful season.
Aren't they the 7th best team in the country? Aren't they in the new AP poll?
7th best team in
the country.
They're
right there, man. Yeah.
They're still there, and it's hard to believe because of where they were last year. But rolling one up here, a big win, a big game coming up. Even if they lose every game from this point forward, this is still just a coup for Auburn football.
Certainly good enough to go up like 10-0, 13-3 against Alabama early on weirdness and crazy plays. They have a very... they don't have a big advantage, but they have a big strength in that Gus Malzahn is calling plays for this team and putting offensive skill players in a position to succeed that 97% of college football teams don't have. And so you have a big chip like that. You can make things interesting if things get weird against a team like Alabama.
Kansas State 49, Texas Tech 26. I appreciate the gentleman, by the way, who tweeted us and said that Baylor wasn't 2012 West Virginia. Texas Tech was.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
They dropped their 3rd straight game after starting the year 7-0 and getting up to 10th in the country. The schedule has gotten notably tougher since late October when they're
looking a lot like Texas Tech as well.
I'm thinking they finished 7-5. They're 7-3.
Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, and they finished with Baylor and Texas, both on the road. It's within the realm of possibility that they win in Austin.
Meanwhile, K-State is back above 500, and it's a nice story for them. You might remember.
We sort of figured they would be, right?
We figured they would, but they lost the opener to North Dakota State, and everyone made fun of them. But after starting the year 2-4, they've now gotten 3 straight wins. They seem on track for a 7-5 season as well.
By the way, Kansas State on the road to like 7-5, which means they're on the road to 10-2 next year.
More than likely.
Yeah.
That's just who they are. Moving on, Vanderbilt 34, Florida 17. Ouch.
Ugh.
Vandy snaps a 22-game losing streak against the Gators. And my oh my, how the tides have turned for Florida. They've been in a tailspin since mid-October. They've lost 4 straight, turned the ball over 4 times in this game. I know they're nicked up, but they can't run the football. They're now 4-5, Dan. They've still got games against South Carolina and Florida State.
Right.
Florida is not making a bowl this season. It's not going to happen.
No, they're going 5-7. I don't see how they're beating Florida State or South Carolina. That's who they have left, correct?
Yeah.
Florida State and South Carolina, I think Georgia Southern.
Yep.
Yeah, it's at a certain point, you can't just say, well, Tyler Murphy's not very good. Or, well, the injuries have added up. The injuries have added up, but they've had time to adjust. They've had time to give 2s and 3s reps with the 1s. And they recruit well. They have recruited well all over the field, perhaps other than quarterback. But the fact that they have the talent they have in the backfield with Kelvin Taylor and Mack Brown, and I think they've lost both their starting tackles, but they've recruited the offensive line fine. They've recruited the defensive line fine. They've recruited the secondary fine. And, you know, Patton Robinette was not able to move the ball against the Florida secondary, but Vanderbilt has the advantage to such degree with the coaching that it's almost insane to look at this Florida team and not think, I don't know how they're getting better next year. What is it that's going to make Florida better next year? I mean, they're going to be healthier.
Is Will Muschamp on the hot seat?
Yes.
I think so. I think he has to be.
To go, and I know a lot of people will point to, well, they went to a BCS bowl last year. They went to a BCS bowl last year with not a ton of injuries. And they probably have more injuries than the mean this year. But even still, in their losses, they didn't look fantastic. In the BCS bowl, they didn't look fantastic. You know, the comments about like, oh, well, we didn't really care. that's indicative of a coaching staff not able to properly motivate and incentivize, or whatever the case is, a Florida team. And I don't mean like money. I mean like just motivation. It's not a Florida coaching staff that should give any Florida Gator fan confidence that a quarterback will be developed in the years to come, that an offensive cohesive system will be formed in the years to come, that they can win in multiple ways. I don't see how you can feel that way about this coaching staff. I don't think he gets fired after the season unless there are personal things that come out about Will Muschamp in addition to getting killed 68-3 against Florida State, which, by the way, is on the table. I think he has another year to fully sort of integrate his own players into the system.
Let me throw this in there. Jason Leeser from the Palm Beach Post points out that Ron Zook was 20-13 when Florida let him go in 2004. Muschamp is now 22-13. Probably will finish the year 23-15 unless the Gators pull off a major upset. So there is some overlap there. Folks were so quick to dismiss Ron Zook, and I'm not saying the guy was a good coach. He could recruit. He couldn't coach. But now here we are again where Will Muschamp, a guy who came in with a lot of fanfare, all of a sudden we see what's going on this year. Florida's probably going to finish 5-7, and there's plenty of reason now to be skeptical. I think you're right. They're going to give him another year at the very least, but next year is pretty pivotal. We must move quickly through some other games. Let's go to your lock of the week, which was Michigan -7. They end up losing by 4, 17-13 to Nebraska in a game that you could argue set football back by about 30 years.
It was awful.
448 yards between both teams. Michigan had a collective negative 21 rushing yards. And hey, that's 27 better than last week when they were 48 in the hole. On the other side of the field, a nice win for Nebraska. Nice 2 weeks, actually. They're quietly 7-2 with three games left.
I'm okay with them being quietly 7-2 because I don't want people yelling at me about Nebraska.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, you know, if you had the Florida State people after you.
Yeah.
Michigan fans are sore losers as well.
Are they?
They are sore losers.
I just
as
sort
well.
Of felt like they've accepted it and they're seeing the same thing.
They haven't accepted it, and that's the problem. You know, we're going to get to Notre Dame here next. I accepted the fact after Notre Dame lost to Michigan, of all teams, Michigan, that they were out of it and that they were playing for pride. And I had realistic expectations for what this team was after seeing the offense and how bad it
looked. Well, you're a grown-up, Ty.
I am a grown-up. Be realistic about what you're watching on television. Devin Gardner looked awful. The offense looks awful. Please, deal with this already. Don't tweet me about it. It's not my fault.
Michigan could lose their last three games.
Well,
at Northwestern, at Iowa, Ohio State. Yeah, I don't know why to feel optimistic at all about Michigan this year. I don't know why to feel crazy optimistic about Michigan next year.
Nope.
Devin Gardner's back. That QB job's going to be wide open.
It better be open.
Shane Morris. No, it will be. And they lose Gallen. They lose Toussaint. They lose Taylor Lewan. I don't feel good about Michigan. Michigan's not good. And I'm a little bit angry at myself for the altar of Dan stuff, not because of the hubris it says for people to worship at an altar of yourself.
Right.
But because I completely ignored the body blow theory and playing a game against Michigan State and then playing a team based on speed and chasing them around. And the fact that Devin Gardner was still a quarterback of the Michigan Wolverines. I'm upset at myself for that. And people were tweeting me, not upset with me, but just telling me that they bet on Michigan because
it happens.
Of my streak. Michigan's not good. Michigan is 6-3 and they could finish 6-6.
I now have the longest active streak for those of you playing the home game. I'm like 8 or 9-3.
Roll with Ty, RWT.
Or 4. I don't know what I am. 8-4, somewhere along those lines. I've hit 5 in a row.
By the way, 4-1, Katie the Capper this week. So by the way, who I explained what a spread was to her after last week's show, after this past Wednesday's show.
Right.
4-1.
It's about right. God. Let's talk about the Notre Dame game, if you'll indulge me for a second.
Yeah.
Pitt does win this game 28-21 at home. I told you guys to take the points.
Yeah, so did I.
I told Pete, you did too. This game is always close for whatever reason. Tell me if you've heard this one before. Tommy Rees, 18-38, 318 yards. Two awful.
Yeah.
Awful interceptions. One in the
red
zone.
Sailed a couple throws.
One in the red zone. Another one late in the game that honestly, and you know, I watch all these games, that might have been the worst throw I've seen him ever make in his career. late in that game, high and over the middle. I don't know what the hell happened.
It was a catcher throwing it so far above the second baseman's head that it was super accurate to the center fielder.
It hit him right in the numbers, yeah.
Right between the numbers, yeah.
Notre Dame's defense couldn't hold down Pitt. Devin Street had two touchdowns in a really nice game. Good. He's very good. Pitt is a team that, just for whatever reason, is able to play Notre Dame type. This is a game that I knew was going to be tight. Notre Dame ends up losing.
Yeah, I'm really curious about Pitt moving forward. And we haven't spent a lot of time on the Panthers this season just because, you know, they start the season basically being the Washington Generals to Jameis Winston's Globetrotters.
Sure.
But, you know, they win three right off of that. They lose to Virginia Tech. They lose to Navy and Georgia Tech. Not terrible losses. But beating Notre Dame, beating a Duke team in that crazy shootout that doesn't look awful. I'm very curious about this Pitt team closing the schedule out with, short of Florida State and probably Clemson, they have the best receiving core in the ACC, with Devin Street and what's his name, Tyler Boyd.
Sure. Yeah, they're good.
North Carolina at Cuse and Miami.
Yeah.
Those are three winnable games.
I think so. With
Miami beat up like they are, Syracuse, which isn't good at all, and North Carolina, who finally got Virginia on their schedule. Hooray. This could be an 8-4 Pitt team, which is it's a nice story for Paul Chryst.
It's a real nice story for Paul Chryst coming over from Wisconsin. And his old team, the Wisconsin Badgers, win 27-17 over BYU. No one else has said this so far, so I'm going to. How is no one talking about Wisconsin's kicker named Jack Russell? The Terrier.
The Terrier.
How is no one talking about this?
I don't know. You know, people don't watch a lot of Wisconsin around the country, and that's why we have you.
Another big game for James White, almost 150 yards and two touchdowns on the ground.
Yep.
Taysom Hill, just 19 of 41 passing. Wisconsin with a sort of dominating win that doesn't really show up in the final score. Like, you look at it and say, well, 10 points, it was manageable. Wisconsin had this one well in hand for 75% of the football game.
Yeah, and Wisconsin's probably going to go 10-2. They got gypped out of the ASU win, so you're talking about a team quality wise is a 10.5 to 11 win team. So they're a 10.8 and 1.2 team. Wisconsin's very good, and it makes the Ohio State win over the Badgers look even better. And they finish with a feisty Indiana team that they're better than, a very feisty Minnesota team on the road. That game suddenly becomes more interesting in terms of just like unexpected Big Ten entertainment value on the 23rd. And then they finish with Penn State at home, and it's Penn State traveling to a place. So Penn State's not going to put up much of a fight.
No, you mentioned Penn State lost to Minnesota. Other than my boy Zach Zwinak and Allen Robinson, Penn State looked really bad in this game. They're 5-4, probably going to finish 6-6. But let's give a hearty Sky Uma for the Golden Gophers and their ultra quiet 8 wins. Which, while we're talking about Wisconsin, this 8-win schedule, this 8-win record so far, reminds me of those years when people weren't paying attention to Wisconsin, and they just ripped off 8, 9, 10 wins a year. 8-4 feels really likely with home games against Wisconsin and Michigan State on the schedule, but kudos to Minnesota for holding it all together and still having a really nice season despite all the other stuff that's going on with Jerry Kill.
Yeah, to play that well with a distraction. I don't want to say that's a distraction. It's like an awful thing that's happening in your midst and with people you love.
Absolutely.
Yes, for them to play as focused football as they've been playing with Philip Nelson really looking consistent, with this team playing sound fundamental football for four quarters, with David Cobb being an upper-level Big Ten running back. I think it was his fourth or fifth straight game going over 100 yards, and on the season, I think he's got one more than that. He is looking really like an outstanding player that they should have next season. This is a Minnesota team that is being built continuously rather than just like flash in the pan. This is Jerry Kill is a program builder, and this Minnesota team is looking like they have bedrock to stand on for a while to come, even if they're breaking rivalry trophies at the end of the games. And Jerry Kill dancing in the locker room.
Good for him. That was great to see. All right. Let's go through a few other ones very quickly here. Texas A&M wins 51-41 in what appears to be Johnny Manziel's final home game at Kyle Field. The students were chanting for one more year, but I think we are all adults here and know that probably ain't happening.
Yo.
He did put on a show, though. 446 through the air, 5 touchdowns. A lot of garbage time points here for Mississippi State. This one was 51-27 with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And it's just, it's sad to see this because if A&M had any defense whatsoever, they'd win the national championship. Johnny Manziel, it's like the game is too easy for him. The college game is too easy for him.
I wouldn't go that far.
The way he's playing?
Well, of all the quarterbacks in the Heisman discussion, he's the only one that threw 3 picks yesterday.
He's the only one who threw 3 picks yesterday, but 446
he's simultaneously pulling A&M away from teams and pulling those other teams back into games briefly.
I don't know. It's just
no, he's great.
He's awesome.
He's the unquestioned quarterback that I'd want for one game in college football.
Unbelievable. All right. Moving quickly through some other action here. Virginia Tech, 42, Miami, 24. And as I mentioned before, I had the foresight and fortitude to lock up an underdog to win outright. And
I like Tech, too. I just didn't lock it.
As expected, Miami had a hard time just finding a running game. They lost Duke Johnson injury. I think you combine that with a few bad mistakes for Miami, and this one wasn't really all that close. Logan Thomas looked good. Trey Edmonds at 4 touchdowns on the ground. Tech well over 500 total yards. They outgained Miami by 200 yards. Mm-hmm. And most importantly now, it blows the Coastal Division wide open. It puts Virginia Tech a half game back in the Coastal, and they've got the tiebreaker over Georgia Tech. So we might be seeing more of Virginia Tech now as we progress forward.
A nice stat for Dallas Crawford, by the way, who stepped in for Duke Johnson at starting running back. From Miami, and just a terrific example of why to always look at a running back's longest run when looking at his final stat line if you're not watching every snap of a game. 10 for 37, real disappointing, really underwhelming. You know, 10 rushes for 37 yards, a little bit under, you know, it's not terrible, a little under 4 yards a carry, but nothing, it's still kind of below average. His long run was 35 yards.
Yeah.
Nine rushes for 2 yards. That's how you know Virginia Tech was that good. And they blow the Coastal wide open. They have the tiebreaker. And it at least makes a potential ACC championship game that much more intriguing.
And very quickly, Texas wins over West Virginia in overtime. 47-40. A wild game that proved the point spread once again is usually right on the money. Not much defense here. It doesn't come as any great surprise. But if West Virginia's scoring 40 on your defense, you could probably expect Baylor to score more.
That's a safe thing to say, Ty. I acknowledge and agree.
Texas was aided by 5 West Virginia turnovers. They're coming home this coming week for a game against Oklahoma State, then a bye, then Texas Tech, which they'll probably beat Texas Tech. And then, of course, the big one, which is the first weekend of December at Baylor. So the Big Ten doesn't play a championship game. If things work out for Texas, this could essentially amount to a de facto Big 12 championship football game.
Yeah, Texas is probably an 8-win team, disregarding that what has happened so far in terms of just how talented and what they're able to do with that talent, and what the coaching situation looks like. They could win 10 games, but they just appear to be, all things considered, an 8-win team. So 5 turnovers to beat West Virginia in overtime. It's nice to win a road game in conference in a tough road environment. West Virginia is not all that good. West Virginia is improved and they're feisty and they can pick spots in order to be dangerous. And their defense, by the way, is much improved. Texas wasn't able to do a ton on the ground consistently, but yeah, Texas is so much more talented than this West Virginia team, and to need overtime against them and to give up 40 and to need those 5 turnovers to really pace themselves.
Yeah.
Worrisome.
All right.
But a win is a win is a win.
UCLA 31, Arizona 26. Miles Jack.
A fun ass game, by the way.
A fun game. Miles Jack is a freshman linebacker who played both ways.
Yep.
In this football game. He rushed for 120 yards on 6 carries, including a 66-yard touchdown, which is really nice. Also had 8 tackles and recovered a fumble on the other side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland fans right now are saying, why didn't it work out for us like this when we tried it? Last season when we needed a quarterback, why couldn't this work out?
Yeah, they needed Miles Jack.
They needed Miles Jack. UCLA wins 31-26 in a game that I think you hit it on the head. This was a fun football game.
Yeah, it was a fun game, and it was, I guess, wise of UCLA sort of seeing that the talent they had at the running back position was either hurt or completely underwhelming. They bring Miles Jack in, who is probably the best athlete on the team just in terms of physical ability and coordination, comes in as a freshman and is already, I won't say an All-American candidate, but he's the best freshman linebacker in the country. And yeah, has a key, huge run for UCLA to put them back ahead. And I'm not a huge Arizona fan at the moment, but they looked good at times. Kadeem Carey, knowing that Kadeem Carey was going to have to shoulder the load against a very good UCLA front, he still goes for about 150 yards. But a nice win for UCLA on the road, hoping to get back into the Pac-12 championship game. They have Arizona State in a couple weeks. UCLA finishes out the schedule in an extremely interesting way. Washington, Arizona State, and then at USC. So they're never leaving Los Angeles, or yeah, they're not leaving Los Angeles for the duration of the season. But interesting. I'm curious. Brett Hundley and Miles Jack in the backfield.
There it is. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to the Solid Verbal, a longer show than usual here, but we went through a number of games, and that's not even taking into account Ole Miss beating Arkansas 34-24, Georgia rolling one up on App State, Oklahoma State rolling one up on Kansas.
And how about Bortles?
And Blake Bortles, yep, winning a hard-fought battle over Houston.
Yeah, that was last second. That was a great game.
Keeping themselves bowl eligible, Fresno State with a win. USC with a big win over Cal, which
Fresno State rolling off what they rolled off, 34 unanswered in the second half.
Yeah, they look good as well. They're another team that hopes to try and bust up the BCS party.
They'll be in
so
there.
It's all sort of figuring itself out, Dan. That's what college football does this time of year.
How about the Rams at Fordham?
10-0 now on the year. Yeah.
Not postseason eligible because I did some research. They offered an athletic scholarship before the Patriot League was allowing teams to do so. Lafayette choking.
Yeah.
Like damn dogs against Colgate at home. But yeah, your Mountain Hawks looking good against College of the Holy Cross.
Absolutely. All right. Well, again, solidverbal@gmail.com. That's our email address. Mm-hmm. Hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/solidverbal, on twitter.com/solidverbal, and on FanCred. Don't forget, right now you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to huluplus.com/verbal. That is a special offer for Solid Verbal listeners. Make sure you use huluplus.com/verbal so you get that extended free trial and so that they know that we sent you, or just go to solidverbal.com and click on the Hulu Plus banner along the right-hand side.
I should also mention, secret verbal-wise,
yes,
please do keep tweeting at our friend Bruce Feldman. Do not mention our handle. Do not mention us at all, but do invite him to go boogie boarding, whether it's in L.A., if you live in an area where there is ocean around you, please extend the invitation and wonder if he would go boogie boarding with you. Please.
If you run the Twitter search on
yeah,
the Bruce Feldman CBS handle and mm-hmm, word boogie spelled B-O-O-G-I-E.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
It's pretty fantastic.
Pretty fantastic. All right. For that guy over there, Mr. Dan Rubenstein in beautiful New York City, for myself, Ty, here in good old Allentown, PA. Thanks again for tuning in. Catch you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.